Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the Lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on September 11th, 2020, from my home studio here in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features the latest on how an offshore drilling moratorium that includes South Carolina came about. We have the most recent unemployment numbers and how the state's trust fund is faring. The governor outlines how he'd like to spend Phase 2 CARES Act money that the legislature will decide next week. Dr. Deborah Birx tells us why we need more testing help from the federal government here in Columbia. DHEC outlines how a vaccine would be implemented in the state, and a high-profile DHEC member leaves the agency. And stick around for our wind-down section as we listen to a new voicemail and hear AT unbox his belated birthday present. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from y'all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a 1 to 3 minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and what's going on in your world, and you might get on the pod. 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control data. There have been 2,877 deaths, and currently there are 126,792 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of September 11th at 4 p.m. Currently, there are 806 patients hospitalized with COVID-19. Of that, 220 are in intensive care, and 131 patients are ventilated. Our current percent positive rate is 14.9%, and on Friday, we had 53 deaths. That's the highest number we've seen in nearly a month. Now for some election year good news. Senator Lindsey Graham spoke with reporters this week about President Donald Trump's executive order, which issued a 10-year moratorium for offshore drilling. Graham explained how he helped get South Carolina included in the moratorium, which covers the Florida coast and Georgia.
So I went to the president, and at one of our golf matches, I can't remember which one, I brought up the idea of, are you considering this for Florida? And he said, yeah. What do you think? I said, I think that's what the people of Florida want. They've wanted it in the past, that if you're going to do it, I would like you to consider South Carolina. And he said, okay. And sort of the rest is history. I called up Purdue and let him know. And so I think North Carolina may be approaching the president here. But this decision to extend the moratorium from 2022 to 2032, I support that decision. Energy independence has been achieved. And I think the deposits that may exist off our coast are not necessary to our energy needs, and continuing the moratorium is going to be beneficial to our coastal communities.
Graham was even in Florida with Trump when he signed the executive order this week, as well as State Representative Nancy Mace, both of whom got shout-outs from the president.
As well as South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham and Tim Scott. Lindsey, thank you. Lindsey liked the idea right from the beginning. I said, what do you think? It took you how long? About 2 seconds to say, I like it. And from South Carolina, State Representative Nancy Mace, who's got a very important race where I think you're doing very well. I think you're doing very well from what I hear, right? You got to win that one. That's an important one. We're behind you 1,000%. You know that, right?
Graham said America's energy independence over the years had led to his evolving views on offshore drilling. Previously saying, in light of Trump's 2017 plan to open most of the country's offshore reserves, as the AP reports, that, quote, there are ways to drill offshore that would not hurt tourism, Graham said. He has since said that he felt states should be able to determine whether or not to allow drilling themselves.
My personal view is still the same. Let's let South Carolina as an entity decide, not Lindsey Graham as an individual. So when I found out that Florida was going to be included, that they were going to extend the moratorium for the state of Florida, I went back to South Carolina and say, we have an opening here. If we want to do this, now's the time. I'll urge the president to extend it up to South Carolina. The biggest change between 2013 and now is just energy independence. We've become much more efficient in energy extraction, fracking, oil production in other areas of the country has created a boom in the energy production area. There are more cars on the road that are electric. So the demand has gone down and the supply has gone up. So the idea of needing to drill in the continental shelf of the East Coast, I don't think exists like it did in 2013. And, you know, when gas is at $5 a gallon, everybody's looking for ways to increase the supply and lower the cost. We've had very stable gas prices over the last few years. And when you look down the road, Jamie, it seems that our demand and production needs are in good shape and that we won't need to go off the coast, the East Coast. And all things being equal, I wanted the moratorium to apply to South Carolina. And here's the good news. President Trump listened. It didn't take much to convince him when I said, I think this is would be good for South Carolina. This is where we're at. And I remember playing golf with him, and he brought it up, and I brought up South Carolina. And he was very accommodating, and I appreciate that.
Okay, so lawmakers return next week to deal with spending, COVID money, and a few other bills. I hate that I'm going to be missing this for y'all, but rest assured we'll have an in-depth recap once the dust settles the following week. And also, it's unclear if lawmakers will be in the week of the 21st. That all depends on what gets done over the next week. So stay tuned. Follow your follow the newspapers, get on your Twitters. They'll be keeping you updated, and we'll have that recap for you when we get back. Now we have the latest unemployment insurance benefit numbers. For the week ending September 5th, 5,113 South Carolinians filed their initial claim for unemployment insurance. That's an increase of 94 initial claims from the week before. Now, the Department of Employment and Workforce also provided an update on the lost wages assistance money that it's still working to implement. Now, once that program comes online, claimants will be required to complete a separate one-time certification for claim weeks ending August 1st, 8th, and 15th. Now, this program will provide an additional $300 for claimants eligible to receive at least $100 in state or federal unemployment benefits, but that $300 money is running out. FEMA said Thursday that all eligible recipients will get the $300 boost to cover the 6 weeks the program was active, a period that ended September 5th. Now, Congress is still stuck on what to do with unemployment benefits because it hasn't done anything with the relief bill yet. So, call your lawmakers, call your congressmen if you're wondering. Moving on, like we've said before, the state's unemployment trust fund was very well positioned for the pandemic, sitting at a $1.1 billion before all hell broke loose. Now, Erica Von Nessen, an economist with Due, gave an update to state senators recently on the unemployment trust fund balance, which recently received a $500 million infusion this summer from CARES Act money. Von Nessen explains in a presentation about optimistic and pessimistic models the agency is looking at for the trust fund.
And the main difference between the optimistic and pessimistic scenarios is essentially how much more the trust fund is going to decline over the next several months. So in the optimistic scenario, we end up in late April of 2021, slightly under $600 million. And in the pessimistic, you can see a bit below that. So if you're looking at exact numbers, we do have this more in a chart format with the different time periods. So through August 22nd, we had spent approximately $909 million on unemployment benefits. That's state-level benefits. There are also federal programs that are currently operating. In total, the agency has processed payments for more than $3.8 billion in funds to South Carolinians, but only 909 of that million came out of the trust fund. But the $500 million has a significant impact for our state's businesses. The money was deposited in our trust fund in mid-August, and it has allowed us to avoid any borrowing of federal money, and it will also minimize trust fund rebuilding surcharges on the businesses in future years. I think many of you are aware from basically the end of the last recession all the way through 2019, the state had imposed surcharges on businesses to first repay all of the loans that we received during 08 and 09, and then to rebuild the trust fund balance from zero up to the $1.1 billion, which is where it was at the start of this pandemic.
Yes, rebuilding the trust fund. Sounds about as much fun as spending money on new tires. Totally necessary, but ugh, right? So what does the future look like for business owners who may have to pay more in taxes to help offset those dispersals? Well, it depends.
So basically in 2021, we would be stabilizing the trust fund balance. So instead of seeing that continuous decline in the balance, the 2021 time period is a time period for it to stabilize. And then once we get past the harshest part of the economic contraction, that's when we would focus on rebuilding the trust fund. If we end up having to raise taxes to receive $367 million, the chart here shows some examples. There are 20 different tax rate classes, and this is just showing an example of someone in class 2, 12, and 19, and comparing what the cost per worker would be approximately in 2020 versus 2021. But essentially, we would be expecting to see tax costs double for businesses between 2020 and 2021 if we do nothing.
Governor McMaster released his priority list of how he'd like phase two of CARES Act money to be spent, which included $450 million to boost the trust fund. Now, this would result in no or minimal rebuilding surcharges being levied against businesses through 2025. So that money would go a long way right there. Additional items on McMaster's priority list for Phase 2 CARES Act money include $45 million in grants for small businesses and nonprofit organizations that did not receive federal Paycheck Protection Program loans, $93 million to reimburse DHEC and MUSC for their continued COVID-19 efforts, $50 million to reimburse public school districts and charter schools for COVID-19 related costs incurred by reopening, and $100 million to be reimbursed to state agencies with verifiable COVID-19 related expenses. Did you get all that? I'm not saying it again. Just hit back like, 15, 30 seconds, you'll get it. If you listen to me at 1.5 times speed, well, maybe you did get it. I don't know. You guys, God bless you. But we will see how the General Assembly decides to act next week when they are in session. Dr. Deborah Birx, the White House Coronavirus Task Force Coordinator, participated in a closed-door roundtable discussion Thursday with University of South Carolina leaders and others. She praised USC's actions to bring students back and implement saliva testing while establishing quarantine facilities on campus, though USC's testing capacity has dropped from 1,200 tests a day to 200 due to capacity issues. Now, Birx urged everyone to get tested following the Labor Day weekend. Here is some of her advice.
And to every South Carolina individual who just got through Labor Day, please know that most of our spreading today is happening in neighborhoods and family gatherings, where just because we know someone, we think that there's no way that they could have COVID. But I want to tell you, you can't tell. And so over Labor Day, if you had a family gathering and you had your masks off and you were close together, please go get tested. We know that asymptomatic spread is occurring. It's occurring between and within families. It's occurring during neighborhood parties. We really encourage all of you to continue to get tested when you've had that kind of exposure so we can stop community spread.
Side note, I plan to get tested again, but Walgreens canceled my appointment. Anyway, it's not about me. Let's continue on. Birx encouraged everyone to get a flu shot as well and said precautions already being taken for COVID-19 should help make this a more mild flu season.
First, hopefully you all are getting your flu vaccine, because if you look at year over year, usually the South ends up with the first cases. And so people in the South, first cases of flu. So they really should be right now getting immunized as the flu vaccine becomes available to the general public in the pharmacies and other places. Secondly, if we all do what we're supposed to be doing about wearing a mask and socially distancing and washing our hands, like the Southern Hemisphere, this may be one of our mildest flu seasons, but that really is on each of us to continue to do those activities. So the activities that I'm talking about that prevent COVID can also decrease flu cases. They can decrease what we call respiratory syncytial virus, adenoviruses, rhinoviruses, and other coronaviruses. So it really will cut down on respiratory transmission. I don't know about all of you, but you should have had the least number of colds this summer. And remember, those summer colds can be quite dramatic. And so really, I hope every person is realizing how this approach is not only decreasing their exposure to COVID, but can decrease their exposure and their infection with other respiratory diseases.
I mean, I typically get a cold in August, and I didn't get one this year. Very exciting to see that. So hopefully that prevails through the fall and winter. Now, Burke said a surge protection team would be heading to Columbia in the coming days to help increase testing efforts and tamp down cases. Later in the day, Acting DHEC Director Marshall Taylor had more about this team.
Surge testing has been done across the country by our federal partners, and they've chosen Columbia to come and do surge testing, which is basically they are here for 12 to 14 days, and they provide all the testing supplies up to 5,000 tests per day. And so it's a great resource, additional testing resource for the Columbia area. And those sites are still being determined. That testing should start, I believe, next week. But they'll be here for several days. DHEC and the University of South Carolina is going to help provide the resources, the logistical resources for those teams. But they do bring in all the testing supplies. They do all the analytical lab work on those tests. And so it's a great resource, and we're really appreciative of them bringing that to South Carolina.
And so it will only be in Columbia or around the state?
The Columbia area. It's just going to be in the Columbia area. And at this point, I believe they're planning for two sites.
Moving on, Thursday was a bit of a who's on first day. You guys know what I mean here? Now, we heard via tweet from Ohio Governor Mike DeWine that DHEC's Director of Public Health, Dr. Joan Duvey, would be taking a position at the Ohio Health Department. Now, it came as a surprise to many since Duvey just came to her DHEC position 5 months ago. Acting DHEC Director Marshall Taylor said Duvey made the decision because it was a step up for her and she'd be returning to family in her native Ohio. However, hours later, Ohio Governor DeWine again took to Twitter to say that Duvey had removed her name for consideration, citing personal reasons. Then on Friday, DHEC announced that Duvey was in fact leaving and that Dr. Brandon Traxer would become interim public health director. Now, Traxer is a Greenville native and has been serving as chief medical officer for the state's COVID-19 response. It was a pretty crazy 24 hours. And during a Thursday press conference, DHEC officials began discussing the procedures they'll take when a vaccine becomes available, something that could happen as soon as later this year. But no one is for sure. But you're probably wondering, who will get the first vaccine when it becomes available to the state, and how will it be dispersed? Well, DHEC's Director of Immunizations, Stephen White, explained.
Each day, with each person who enrolls in a Phase 3 COVID-19 vaccine trial, including right here in South Carolina, the medical world is learning more and more about three promising vaccines being tested here in the U.S. I know we are all hopeful that one of these vaccines will help put an end to this unrelenting virus that spreads without symptoms, literally stealing the breath from our loved ones and neighbors, colleagues and friends, not just in South Carolina, but also across the country and across the world. Although we don't know exactly when the vaccine will be made available in the United States, I want to assure you that DHEC is forging partnerships and following federal guidelines for developing a plan for distributing the vaccine within our state when it becomes available.
That vaccination plan is now in the works with several agencies and groups, with the goal being the equitable distribution of the vaccine across the state. But it will be a phased rollout when it happens.
When the vaccines first become available in South Carolina, the numbers of doses will be limited. These limited doses will be allocated according to federal guidance to those at highest risk for contracting the virus and those at the highest risk of death. These groups include, one, our frontline medical personnel, including those individuals who provide care for our senior populations in nursing homes, two, residents in nursing homes, and three, critical infrastructure employees. As vaccination production ramps up and additional vaccines complete the approval process, we are being told that there will be sufficient doses available nationwide that we will be able to open up vaccinations to the general public.
When it's time to get the vaccine, it's not going to be a one and done like the flu shot either.
The vaccination is a two-dose series, which means individuals will need two doses of COVID-19 vaccine in order to provide protection against COVID-19 disease. Timing between the first and the second dose is currently unknown. However, assumptions are we could be looking at 21 to 28 days or even longer. Individuals that receive the first dose will need to receive the same brand of vaccine for the second dose. Our current COVID vaccination planning process and timeline will continue to evolve as more information becomes available to us from the federal government.
And as we leave this section, I just want to follow up on the new nursing home visitation guidelines. DHEC Director Marshall Taylor did say that so far, 46 facilities have submitted plans and 24 plans have been approved. And if you're visiting anyone, let us know. We'd love to hear about your experience and how your loved one is doing at 803-563-7169. Now, this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's happening in your world. Are you going to work? Are you going to visit a loved one in a nursing home like we just asked? Are you working in a nursing home or on the front lines of this pandemic in another capacity? How are you handling self-isolation? Are you going out and about? What are you seeing? What are you hearing? Let us know at 803-563-7169. You might get on the pod. So, AT, who is going to get on the pod today?
Oh, today yeah. We have a classic lead friend, Ooh. A classic leader, Towner. He's called in before. He's an OG leader. He's jumping the line a little bit, but that's only because he's talking about something that's very near and dear to your heart here, Gavin. Apologies to everyone who's backlogged a little bit. We'll get to you after our week off, which we earned, but we will get back to it when we come back in 2 weeks. So let's roll the tape.
Yes. Roll Towner tape.
Hey, what's up, guys? Towner McGill here, down in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. Just wanted to give you a quick update on what's going on in my world and our world here in the Lowcountry, in the fourth largest city in the state. Still working from home, no end in sight. Have been working from home with wife and two kids every day for 6 months. It's going pretty well, but just this week, two of those have returned to school, in-person school. You know, we assess the risks and benefits of having them there. And obviously my wife's got to go back to work and thought it was best for the kids to go back too. Youngest one starts next week in 4K. Everybody's tucked away in their safe little spots in elementary school and high school down here and trying to do our best to continue to control the spread, make sure they stay there, stay healthy, stay safe. It was really just disheartened to hear the news of the teacher up in Richland, too, that passed away, 28-year-old, yesterday from COVID. And, you know, on that same topic, had a really interesting Tuesday night here. As you guys are speaking about, the Mount Pleasant Town Council did not renew the mask ordinance last week. So when a new ordinance came up this week, despite feeling confident that it would pass 5-4, felt like I needed to get out there and lend a voice and maybe combat some of the negativity that is rampant in the town council. And I'm glad I spent that 3-4 hours of my life sitting there in an effort to do so. A lot of crazy discussion. We had folks accusing our mayor and our town council of being pedophiles, of using masks to promote child trafficking. We had people yelling at them, ranting, raving. I think our town chief of police had to stand up 5 or 6 times to calm the crowd and ask people to stop with the rabble-rousing. But in the end, reason prevailed, and we'll have a second reading hopefully next week and get back on track. We can continue to keep the spread of COVID maybe more contained, less widespread, less ongoing. Can't wait till I hear Gavin not say those words on the podcast one day. Other than that, just kicking it at home. Still growing out this COVID beard, trying to take off some of this COVID weight. My walkabouts every day. Enjoy listening to the show. Looking forward to some election season talk here from you maybe on some state and local races, perhaps. And I look forward to seeing you guys in person again at some point. Football as well. Bye.
Towner, oh my God. Great to hear from you. Glad that you haven't broken anything this time around. Sounds like you've recuperated, though you are, sounds like, on the front lines down there in Mount Pleasant with the pedophile ring and all the Q conspiracies that are cropping up. Love to hear about those because they're so fake. Unfortunately, they do such damage to people.
They are so fake and stupid, and we do not condone them here.
Yeah. QAnon, if you are a QAnon person, please leave us a voicemail. We won't play it. But we'd love to hear from you because we don't traffic in conspiracy theories that are so obviously fake.
Let's read a book, folks. Yeah. You know,
we've been really pushing books, not like L. Ron Hubbard books, folks. Don't call me your Scientologist. I'm not going to go there either, but come on. But seriously,
please don't come for us, David Miscavige.
L. Ron Hubbard. But yeah, I can't imagine. You know, council meetings are already like enough to sit through, but when you got that kind of crazy being spouted for a couple hours and you got the police chief standing up because people are just trafficking in false truths, like, could you imagine if people actually just were educated and knew the facts? And
well, you could have been out there 90 minutes flat. Come on.
They're much faster. But, you know, since everything's under attack from science to daily life, and apparently the town council is part of the QAnon conspiracy, who would have thought? Wow. That's the next
cabal
one.
It reaches very, very far, Gavin. Okay. Yeah, clearly. Towner, I gotta commend your beard. You have a great quarantine beard. I could never. If you want to shave a mustache in solidarity with us, I'm for it. And I'm glad you figured out how to cook with the left hand enough to put on some quarantine.
Yeah.
Good for you.
The left hand cooking. Yeah, keep to the walks. God, it's tricky sometimes. AT.
The moment
is here.
It's here.
It's here.
How long? What's the date? Oh, I know. September 11th. I remember. So we are a month late.
It's British. It came from Manchester.
Manchester. Are you daft?
You can read it. It's on the tube. Read the tube.
It's a cardboard tube.
Yeah,
it's
tell
a box.
Everyone
it's
what
a
you're
tube.
Doing. We're doing an untubing. Our first untubing.
We're gonna do the first untubing maybe ever. if you could see it, it's a box. It's a tube.
It's a tube. It's a tube box.
It's a tube box. So I don't know what it is. I'm opening it now. Listen.
Oh wow. Great ASMR.
That was it.
Yes.
Okay.
Ooh.
Oh, what's this?
Easy. Okay. It's a picture.
Easy.
Okay. Tell everyone what you're seeing. What are you feeling?
I'm extracting from the tube.
Okay.
A
very
black
slowly.
Roll.
Oh, wow.
I think Gavin bought it. From what I can tell right now, it's a third out. Gavin bought me a British garbage bag.
Yes. But it's made of
so here it comes.
Paper.
Here it.
It's all the way out
tissue.
Now.
It's all the way out of the tube. Mm-hmm. It's still garbage. Let's see here.
Oh, wow. Listen to that. That sounds really great.
Oh, it's so heavy. No, I'm lying. You don't know that, though. Let's see. This is wrapped very strangely. Okay.
Well,
Gavin can
British.
See it. I cannot see it. I'm turning it over. Oh, it's wonderful. It is The Simpsons depicted as... characters
the
from
Beetlejuice waiting room,
the waiting room in hell or the afterlife in Beetlejuice. And Marge is the cut in half girl. And Homer is Beetlejuice feeling her legs. Abe Simpson, Grandpa Simpson has a shrunken head. Oh, this is great. This is fantastic. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I absolutely love this. This is the year of Simpsons gifts with us.
Yes. That's why.
Marge
that's
is reading the cookbook for the recently deceased. Oh, this is wonderful.
Yes.
I love this.
Yes,
I truly do.
Very happy. Glad it was worth the wait.
Oh,
we supported some local art, even though it was local across the pond.
Somewhere else.
Etsy.
Yeah.
Etsy. So, but yeah, I thought you guys saw that. I was like, this looks good. And I mean, the quality of it is beautiful, too.
It
really comes
it
out
is
sharp
too.
And
it,
great colors.
They really did a great job with all the characters. And I mean, you nailed my aesthetic.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm just realizing I have to jump on a Zoom call right now. So
say bye. Say bye.
Say bye. Bye, guys. Y'all, thanks for
everyone.
This.
Be safe.
Everyone
in our week off. Don't have any dangerous reveal parties, please.
Safe.
They're stupid to begin with.
Yeah. We also, in addition to not condoning QAnon, we vehemently do not endorse gender reveal parties. So.
They are stupid, and please never invite me to one. Thank you. Bye.
Gender is a social construct. Thank you for listening to the pod, y'all. Show us your appreciation by leaving us a review or a voicemail 803-563-7169. You can stay up to date with the latest on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. Also, consider becoming an ETV member. Membership starts at just $40, and if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport and all the great programming your donation helps support. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
Well, my ear, I know how ears work. They shoot the sound out, right?
This is all in one ear. My ear chamber. Save that ear discussion for later. So we talked about how ears work today, folks.